Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 115. This is Steve Borsch, and I'm sitting here at Best Buy's headquarters at Mobile March Twin Cities with Tim Elliott.
Afternoon.
Yeah, it is afternoon. Phil Wilson.
Afternoon.
And Graham, I'm having my lunch thickened.
I'm still eating. I'm running a little late here.
We're actually live from Pennsylvania.
What's in Pennsylvania?
Well, it's the Pennsylvania room here at the
Best
Buy headquarters.
Right.
I thought it was Maryland.
No, we're in Pennsylvania.
Oh, yeah.
Can't you tell?
All right.
Did you see the Liberty Bell?
Well, I got to tell you, I'm really impressed by how many people are here. What was the count?
We got 250 folks signed up. So, yeah, I think we probably could have sold a whole lot more in the last 2 days. We're notoriously late signing up group. So, but we have a good crowd of people here, and it's seems to be we're seeing a good balance between the marketing side. Listening to Graham have his chips.
Yes.
No, he's like, I'll reach for the loudest food I have.
Yes. Is that chip?
Those are kettle. Food? Of course, kettle chips.
The mobile marketing side, mobile business side, and the mobile development side, we seem to have a very good balance going. So it's very nice to see that. And so far, everybody has great comments to say. So that's always good because we always like to do better than the year before.
Great. It's my first year, and it's really impressive.
So it is much better than the year before.
Well, I don't know about last year because I was traveling last year, so I would have been there, but I was in California. So it's good to kind of drop in on this. I've been on the technical side since you guys were all covering the business stuff, so we could little live tweet it for Minivate. But it's been great to kind of see the enthusiasm, see all the developers there learning about different tools for different kinds of phones and tablets and such. So,
well, I thought Jack Philbin that gave the keynote, I thought he was great.
Good.
Yeah, he did a great job, and he had really good data about the growth of the mobile space, about the operating system penetration, about who's doing what, and who's marketing and how they're doing it and so on. He had great numbers.
And only 30% of people use smartphones today. That's just hard to believe.
No, I can believe that. I mean, we're very close. It's hard for us to see the forest for the trees, but yeah, I can see that. It was 28% just a few short months ago. So the growth is pretty strong.
Well, Lisa Foote, though, she's always from MixMobi. She's always harped on the fact that too many of us don't focus on the fact that worldwide something like 93% of all phones are dumb phones essentially.
Yeah.
Just
feature phones.
Feature phones.
I agree. And she and I have always been very much together on that concept, and it's very important, especially from the both developer and business user. Because you've got to give that time for adoption. You've got to let adoption take place. Some of what we're talking about today, especially I think especially on the lines of QR codes, which are growing rapidly, but there's still very few people use QR codes, and there's still lots of education to be done.
Especially guys, apparently.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a woman thing. Did you see the data that I don't know if it's data, but they said women are driving QR codes. And as I thought about it, that's the only place I've ever heard anybody talk about them.
And here's a quick anecdote. So my bride, who is the only reason she's as technologically savvy is because I make her. I can't make her do much.
You drag her in kicking and screaming.
Yes. She's like, why do I have the website? In 97, we had a website. And in 2004, now, why do I need to blog? And so on and so forth. But now she came to me totally out of the blue. She had been at the Houseware show in Chicago, and she came back and she said, okay, I don't care what it takes, we have to do QR codes in the Turing Curve, which is our newsletter. Right. I said, wait a minute. Why? Oh, just because they're this and they're that, and they're this hot and they're this and that. I said, no, wait a minute. You're always the one who says to me, what's the benefit and what's the business case for it and why are we doing it? Mm-hmm. And I'd ask you that same question. Why would you want to put one in there, and what would it do? Mm-hmm. And that's why I really like listening in this QR code session today, having Lisa Foote say, really emphasize that it's not about having a QR code that just pulls up a page on your website. I mean, it's just that's just a waste.
Well, I think
there has to be a payoff.
Well, if you're going to go through the scanning. True. Well, yeah, that's true of all of this technology. It's true of Foursquare. It's true of QR codes. It's true of everything.
Yeah.
If there's no payoff to use the app, if there's no benefit other than, ooh, that's really cool, you're not going to be able to expand as a business beyond the techno-weenies that, you know, like us, who say, oh, well, I'll try that out. You're really going to have to drive. That was one of the things that I saw last night at Mobile 3D, the first demo event we've ever done for mobile, and that was where's the deal, or where's my deal, or
what's the deal? What's
locate my deal.
Locate my deal. That was
Aaron. Aaron Cardell.
And Joseph Reuter. What I really liked about that was that it did tap into the interactive space and all of the location-based systems that are there, but it also taps into the coupons that are available in circulars. I mean, you can actually draw in the coupons from circulars on that app. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's a wonderful transition piece to go from traditional or heritage media to new media new interactive stuff.
Here's what struck me about that one in particular, and for those listening, we'll put the demo people in the show notes so you can actually go to those. And they're on the Mobile March site, so we'll link to that. Here's what I found interesting about Locate My Deal is, yes, I receive the Groupons and the Living Socials and all the other, not all the other, but probably half a dozen deal ones, just because I want to see what's going on. But what I realized when I was watching that is these guys have put a layer of value over the deal sites. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just, oh, now you don't have to get all the emails, you can do it. It's more about, okay, we want to go out to eat tonight. Well, let's look in our area and see who's got a deal.
Yeah, can you imagine if Yelp overlaid that?
Oh,
I use Yelp all the time to find restaurants in new locations.
Yeah, you mentioned that, and I have never used Yelp. It's interesting.
It's great, and
I do it for hotels.
What's funny is that I use it almost exclusively when I'm traveling. So I'll be in San Francisco in a certain part of the city, and I'll dial it up, and I'll find a place to go eat breakfast. Right. And we were out, my daughter and I, just this week in Apple Valley of all places, which is right next to Lakeville. And I dialed up Yelp.
He's a traveler. Going to Apple Valley.
And found a restaurant in Apple Valley, which is 5 miles away from where I've lived for the last 12 years or more. And it was a great place. Never heard of it before, ever. And probably would have never gone in there had it not been for the Yelp reviews. And it was great.
What was the name of the place, just out of curiosity?
Remy's.
Remy's.
Have been there?
Nope, never have.
New York pizza and... they also do sort of Mediterranean kinds of stuff.
Well, same thing.
You have to roll that
up
New York pizza like I'm doing half.
Put it in half. You've got to fold it in half.
Similar. Well, the same thing happened to us, though, with Amazing Thailand. Looking it up on Yelp and having people absolutely rave about Amazing Thailand, and it was right next to the Apple Uptown store. So we went there to pick up our daughter night.
I was standing in line, freezing my butt off. Yeah,
and we went in there.
It is.
You get one?
It is amazing Thailand food, Thai food. It's really phenomenal. It's the best. It's the best I've ever had.
The girl was going up and down the line, handing out business cards and writing 10% discount on the back.
Very smart.
That's good.
That's what you call your guerrilla marketing, right? Yeah, there, baby.
There you go.
Yeah. So take advantage of the
with a captive audience. Well,
and they're Apple
where
people,
the ducks
so
are.
They're probably into that kind of food.
Yeah, you know, I suppose.
Apple folks were into that,
Oh, would you stop?
Eclectic world cuisine kind of action, right?
That's right, because we're more sophisticated, right, Graham?
there were a lot of Asians in the line. I thought, are these people shipping these over to Hong Kong, or what the heck is going on?
Have you seen those stories,
though? Yeah.
There's big suitcases full of iPads and stuff.
And they're arresting them in Russia at the Moscow airport.
Oh, really?
Russians coming back in with multiple iPads. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to smuggle iPads into Russia, apparently.
I don't understand why that's bad.
But I don't know. I don't know.
They can get tons more money for them, that's for sure.
Well, the going rate in Asia right now for an iPad 2 is $1,000.
Wow. Double your money. If you can get them.
If you can get them.
How did we segue to Apple?
I don't know.
We always do.
It always
you
happens.
Did, you did it.
I right, did?
So let's talk
when did
about,
I do that? He did it. I didn't do it.
So, Tim, did you go to this iPhone versus Android showdown?
Yeah, Graham
was
there,
too. Was that the one where the two guys were developing
Head-to-head apps? Developer. Okay. So it was basically one guy was an Xcode developing for the iPad or iPhone, and the other guy was an Eclipse developing for Android. And they did very simple applications, but it was one to the other.
Okay.
It's very interesting. I don't know what you thought, Graham, but Xcode is so sophisticated from a visual development standpoint. You can develop almost anything very quickly and easily, but still has that power under the hood if you need to get right to the code. Where Eclipse is very super geeky. I mean, I can't imagine spending much time in there because it's not as visual. It's a lot of code that you're typing in manually. You can do some sophisticated development there, and I think some of the developers were saying, well, there's more tools there, and maybe it's slightly better than Xcode. But to me, looking at sort of like a layman, Xcode looks like a Ferrari compared to a 10-year-old Ford Explorer.
So how would you compare that then to the next tech session, which was about Titanium, which I've always looked at as a much higher level development tool? So because I'm waiting for the tools to go up to the next step so a guy like me can use them, who's a weekend warrior with coding and is just knows enough to be dangerous, but I certainly couldn't make money doing it. How would you compare the Xcode current Android development with Titanium? I mean, was it a big leap forward?
Well, from
a different paradigm altogether.
No. Going from Eclipse, which is the Android development kit, to Titanium, I think would be a huge step up. So I can see myself developing in Titanium. And the benefit to it is that you can get both executables for both Android and for iPhone. It's not quite as nice as Xcode is as far as developing interfaces and that kind of thing. But during the session, the guy from the company that that makes that said, you really want to get your app to about 80% cross-platform within their tool, and then you just open it up in Xcode and finish it for the iPhone. Open it up in Eclipse and you finish it for Android. So they can go 100% of the way, and for simple apps, that's probably, that would be fine.
Is it a pricey tool?
No, it's open source, free download. Here I downloaded it and installed the whole thing on Best Buy's bandwidth.
So it's the company is appcelerator.com.
Yep.
And I went in and signed up for this at the beginning and then saw some videos and went, no, I'm not.
It's come a long way. I did the same thing about a year ago. I saw this, I downloaded it and played with it and was not quite there.
Yeah.
Now this is, I think, usable for not only professional developers, but also for people like us that might want to dabble in it.
Well, okay, so let me ask you this question, and this is just a gut check sort of question, but you're a guy, Tim, that has done WordPress development like I have, and so you've used frameworks and you've used themes on top of frameworks and you've gotten into the PHP code and all that stuff. And would this be something that somebody that's, a power user and fairly technical, or a company that has fairly tech-savvy people could get it to that 80% and then hire a developer to finish the last 20?
I think so.
Okay.
And I think that Xcode works the same way, but not
cross-platform.
Not cross-platform, and I don't think you could probably get the app as far as you could with Titanium. I felt that the Xcode, great for laying out interfaces, the best on the market, but you really need to know how to program to do much more there.
Okay.
This I can see they've got libraries, they've got ways that you can build up the application that seem to be, pretty powerful.
By the way, I just wanted to mention, because I heard it on the mic, that was actually Graham zipping closed his briefcase.
Not unzipping anything else.
It was not anything, because that's what it sounded like, and it was not what you think.
You gotta eat some more of those kettle chips.
No, I'm done with the kettle chips. Can't even muffle those with my mouth closed.
Okay.
I was going to say, Bill Hyman has been using Titanium, I think, for some time at CodeMorphic.
Oh, really?
I remember him talking about it at Mini WebCon last year. He did a presentation.
Hmm.
So
Yeah, you know, no, it seems to be a you know, popular tool.
Yeah, for real developers that know what they're doing like he does.
Right.
You know. Well, there's no question that you know, you look at this audience and the people that are here and the people that are especially on the business side that are marketers and they're, you know, I talked to a woman that's a business analyst for a company that shall remain nameless that we all know.
For transparency.
Yeah, I know. but people are looking for these higher level apps so that they can do things in the mobile space. They want to be able to not necessarily build apps, but publish to the iPad or build some level of interactive stuff for the Android tablets and phones and iPhones and iOS devices. And I think as more and more people get into the space, it's going to come. The demand's going to be there. And
there are a lot of these online tools. In fact, there's some that were developed locally that do very simple, like you can turn your blog into an app, and it's, you know, it's sort of like you do it online, and then they submit it for you, and you pay them a couple $100 and you're done. Yeah. That kind of thing, from templated apps, I think, you know, there's some value to that. But there's really not anything that's between that and what you can get with Titanium. And that's a huge opportunity, I think. Like we were talking last week, I think whoever comes up, and hopefully it's Apple, comes up with a HyperCard for iPad development,
mm-hmm.
they're going to be the big winners because a lot of us will, you know, buy that thing and develop apps.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, the guy from Vibes Media touched on the debate, the apps versus web apps debate on mobile. He just barely touched on it, though. He didn't.
See them as exclusive to each other, though. I mean, I think that there's a lot of integration between apps and, mm-hmm. and online. So, mm-hmm. I think that'll just sort of that line will continue to blur as more and more things are developed.
Well, one of the interesting things that, you know, we didn't talk about Windows Phone 7, but the first session there was about that, and the guy, you know, the way that he explained it, the way that Windows Phone 7 is architected is a lot of the processing goes on in the cloud. So it's not like doing background processing on the phone itself. It's mm-hmm. doing it offsite on the server, and then when something happens, like it's following a Vikings game, let's mm-hmm. say, or a Twins game, when something happens, it can send notifications back to the handset. Yep. The handset doesn't have to do the processing. Mm-hmm. I think that's a very smart way of yep. conserving battery and yep. integrating the cloud into the yep. mobile device.
That's where it's going. Yep. For sure.
Well, the other trend that I thought was really fascinating was when I was working on a client project using WordPress as an engine, there's a mobile app called WP Touch. It's really a plug-in and a theme, mm-hmm. and you can skin. Well, you're using it on the
mobile Mart site, yeah.
And so we bought a developer license for WP Touch. And Turbo CSV, by the way, and Map Press Pro.
All right.
And Gravity Forms.
And Gravity Forms. Yeah. But the WP Touch interface, they actually have a theme, and they're building out training and tutorials and so on building iPad apps. They've got a demo on their site. And so all the underlying content is WordPress.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, the delivery is an iPad interface or even an iPhone interface mm-hmm. with pop-up menus and, you know, some level of touch interactivity.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really fascinating because this marriage, you know, it's like we're all going to want to participate in this space in mobile in a lot of ways, whether it's publishing something as a product catalog. That's why the other guy that was at Mobile 3D last night, who's basically been in the training space for 12 years, and has built a tablet app, an iPad app for essentially replicating the whole flow and process and everything going on with the training meetings that are held by big companies.
Yep.
And he basically put everything and stuck it in the iPad. So no more three-ring binders and handing out all the stuff, and they can measure, you know, and have people take tests and all kinds of stuff right in the app.
Yeah, the iPad becomes the front end to all the stuff you can do in the cloud, you know,
yep.
and all these things will start interacting, kind of like not even apps, but there'll be just software agents out there, you know, the world is going beyond apps here, you know, and we can kind of see it coming. And the guy, Mike Haig, even sort of touched on that, not in a techie way, in that last session.
Yeah.
Towards the end there, when you asked him that question, that was kind of interesting about...
Well, and you know why I asked him that question is that I had this really bizarre experience 4 years ago when I wrote that Rise of the Participation Culture and delivered as a PDF. Is I started to write that, not for the audience, but I started to write it to impress people that I was going to meet at Web 2.0, right? I'd release this and people would look at it and go, wow, that's really great. And I got about 3 or 4 days into the writing of it, and I realized, you know, this is all ego-driven. I mean, come on, Borsch. You're not writing this for that audience. You're writing it, you know, ostensibly so I could deliver it to people that I was giving dog and pony shows to and doing team stuff for, is give it to them in advance so they'd all be on the same page. But that's where that question came from, because then I started to read about other writers and authors and people that are producing film and everything else, that if you... And this is why sequels to movies fail and TV shows that knock one another off and all of that, because it's all about the dollars and cents in the business versus coming at it from the perspective of the audience. And in our case, with mobile and apps, it's coming from the perspective of the prospect or the customer or the user or whatever, is what's best for them. Because if you can figure out what's best for them, then you can figure out where those intersection points are. And I think that's what Haig's point was.
Yeah,
that's what he was driving toward with this whole thing. And
That was really a fascinating session.
It was fun,
creative, out of the box guy.
And he's making, he's in a research and development group, right?
What do they call it?
Emerging technologies.
Gary
Colling's group. Yeah,
but he's an old ad creative guy from Fallon.
Very much so.
Yeah.
I love the way he said he does most of his work at the bar.
Yeah.
Just like you,
but,
Graham.
But
right.
I haven't taken my crusty old MacBook into a bar in a long time, but he said it was so he can get immediate reaction from people. He gets questions.
Yeah.
You know, he wants to hear, he listens, you know. He wants to listen to what users do, or like, what was he talking about? How he'll meet people at the bar and find out what they do for a living and how they spend their days and I think what he was driving at is he's finding out how they use mobile, how they use their mobile device.
Well, because too often, most companies will go to some director in some group and say, here we want to, he was making that point, is now here we want to go do this mobile app because it's hot. Mm-hmm. So let's go make an iPhone app rather than, okay, well, wait a minute, what's the strategy? What are we trying to do? Who are we trying to reach? Why are we doing this?
Yeah.
What's it going to connect? I mean, and he asks those questions, which is...
Yeah, makes people think,
Well, and it's good. We should always, because we always goof on the technology. But at the same time, though, you know, when you really think about it, it's because of the technology, it creates new opportunities. You know, if he's sitting in that bar talking to Joe Sixpack, trying to figure out what Joe Sixpack's wrestling with so he can figure out what apps to build, if you don't know what's possible, i.e. if you don't know what the technology can do or what it is, you'll never be able to even think that's a good opportunity or even if it's worth doing, because it's not possible. So I'd like to have a holodeck, but the technology's not there, right? I'd like to have a Star Trek replicator, you know, that the computer could make anything out of atoms, but the technology's not there. So, you know, if you know what's possible.
It's fascinating that a guy like him, a creative guy, though, is so into the technology now. I mean, you know, 5, 10 years ago, I don't think you saw that, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that kind of comes back to really the whole purpose for Mobile March. Is the concept of bringing the creative and the analytical together.
Yeah.
Because we have the developer side and the marketing and business side. And, I mean, that's really, we hope to get that cross-pollinization. And, you know, we'll do that also with Mobile Twin Cities, which meets every month. So,
right. Well, before we should probably wrap up here in a few minutes. I would love to go around the horn just real quickly. Pick one thing today that really just made you just stop for a second and was really profound in some way, or a good meeting or a good discussion you had, or just something that just struck you.
Well, I think Haig, you know, Haig talking about users and you know, understanding your users, you know, really jumps out at me because I know it will be so helpful to so many people that are planning apps out there, you know, if they think in those terms. I mean, and the user experience guys that are here understand that very well, I think, but we need more of those kind of people that get that user experience. And so to me, that was one of the most profound things.
I think the keynote speaker talking about how many apps are sort of abandoned after their first downloaded.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah,
he said 50%, something.
No, he said 36% of apps are opened once.
Wow. So that tells me you have to have a killer app. And I think of the apps that I use all the time. And it's either communication, or mostly actually communication, or there's some game sort of element, some four, you know, mm-hmm. location-based, four-square-y kind of a thing, or a location like Yelp, you know, mm-hmm. to it. And you have to really appeal to the user in a way that will get them to come back, or they're not going to use it anymore.
Yep. Yeah, you don't have too many chances, I guess.
No.
And you know, it's got to be very app useful. Right when you get out there with it.
And when I think about, you know, the really popular apps, especially on the iPhone, you get things like Instagram.
Instagram.
Oh, I love Instagram.
The idea of Instagram is so stupid simple, but it doesn't demand much from the user. And I think that's an important element to it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So you don't demand much from the user. They take a picture, it goes up. There's a social network around it. That's it, right?
Yeah.
Now, they could have put all sorts of crap around that. They could have all sorts of metadata about the location, and they have a field for you to have you record a message with it or whatever. They just decided to leave all that stuff out to make it as simple as possible. So I think that is another element that app developers have to think about.
Well, that's always the hard part, is what you leave out, not what you put in.
Right. It's you got to make it really super easy for the user.
Keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah. Yep.
The KISS theory. Yeah.
How about you, Phil?
The corned beef at lunch.
They got a deal on that.
That was a moment for me.
They got a deal on that, Tim's.
After Saturday, second day. I think that, you know, probably a little less focus for me, because I'm bouncing from room to room and that sort of thing. But what really impresses me, and impressed me last night at Mobile 3D, was we've got some brilliant people doing some really great things, but it's all sort of at a grassroots level. Mm-hmm. You didn't see any huge corporations there last night building apps.
Right.
These guys were, you know, whether it was a game app or, a useful app, or just incredible stuff coming out of the Twin Cities. And I was very taken by, the things that are going on in my town,
Minnesota.
In Minnesota.
Think of DoApp in Rochester. And
just incredible stuff.
And
I was also very impressed with the level of interest. You see that here, obviously, at Mobile March, because we've got a full house, a lot of people. But last night, at many demo events that we go to, you know that it's, you know, split between people hanging out in the bar talking and networking and people watching demos. Every single person was in there watching demos last night.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Even though the bar was open, everybody was watching demos.
Well, they would walk back and forth and get a drink and come back.
Yeah, but not that much. I was very impressed with that. So I just very impressed with what's happening in the mobile space here in the Twin Cities and in Minnesota.
Yeah. Well, my big aha, I kind of already mentioned a little bit of this, but my big aha was the realization of why I've been so incredibly disappointed with QR codes in general, and why when my wife said that, I said, no, let's just not bother right now. And the disappointment is that there's a hidden mystery behind every QR code. And so when I would scan these QR codes, there's some part of my being that has this expectation that something fun's gonna happen, or there's gonna be a surprise element, or I'm gonna learn something.
And most of them are boring as hell.
Exactly. It's worthless.
Give it time.
Lisa say that, and have it echoed by the panelists who were to say, there's got to be some value behind it.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be a payoff for doing it.
Well, the best one was the free drink on the Swizzle, the QR on the Swizzle stick, the Chino Latino.
Yeah.
I'm all over that.
Where do I sign up?
Just for the man that kept it back to me for drink tickets.
One of the tweets from that session I noticed was one of the attendees was talking about he'd like to see a QR code on a beer bottle, right?
Yeah.
I think he was joking about it, right? And I responded to that saying, well, a lot of wineries are using QR codes right now, and the most effective are using video. So it's sort of unexpected. They don't tell you when you scan it, but you scan it, and it could be the winemaker, could be the owner, talking in a four or five minute video about that particular wine, you know, talking about maybe recipe pairings or whatever about it. So that gives you sort of an emotional connection with the winery.
That's a
great application. You want to know something funny? I'll send you a link to this. But it's Francis Ford Coppola at his winery in California.
Known as the Coppola Winery.
Yeah, and he's
Actually Rubicon Napa Valley now.
Okay.
He has another one in Sonoma that's Francis Ford.
Sorry about that.
but he's sitting in this wood paneled, beautifully lit, I mean, a very warm, very cinematic lighting scheme. He's dressed in this in this off white suit. And the guy, honest to God,
did he have a Panama hat on or anything?
But it absolutely, I mean, it's a fabulous, fabulous video because it's so surprising after watching, you know, a couple of young Chinese guys playing air guitar and sing, you know, lip syncing Bob Dylan, you know, in some cheesy webcam video to seeing something gorgeous and stunning. And to your point, I think that's kind of a neat idea.
Yeah, no, it's unexpected though. When you do a QR code, like I go to Best Buy and I know now that the QR codes on all the tags, they're going to take me to a detail page of that product, give me specs. You know, that's great.
Yeah.
Right. So that's my expectation. You know, you just don't know, and most of the time you're going to hit something like that. You're going to hit some web page, right?
Yeah.
If you get a personal video, I think that does you know that connection and so much of loyalty in the wine business is that emotional connection to the winery. So the people have to either visit there or have some sort of interaction.
Yep.
And Facebook is part of that, and using video on QR codes on bottles is part of that.
Right.
Yep.
Well, this has been a good one. We got to wrap up. We got to get back into the next session. And
next
thank
week
you.
On the Minivet Gang podcast, we'll be at the Overnight Web Challenge.
Oh.
The Overnight Website Challenge.
A week from today.
Yeah. Wow. So remember, we're slated for 1 a.m. for that, guys. So. Thanks very much for joining us on the Minivet Gang podcast.
Take care.